Welcome to the Optimal Body Podcast. I'm Doc Jen.
And I'm Dr. Dom, and we are doctors of physical therapy, bringing you the body tips and physical therapy pearls of wisdom to help you begin to understand your body, relieve your pains and restrictions, and answer your questions.
Along with expert guests, our goal of the Optimal Body Podcast is really to help you discover what optimal means within your own body. Let's dive in.
All right, I want you to think of five quick things. What are the first things that come to mind when you think of convenient snacks that you take on the road or when you're traveling? What came up? Was it something that you get on the airplane or run quick that you get through the gas station or a drive-thru? Jen and I have found our solution, and it's Paleo Valley. We absolutely love their beef and meat sticks. I love their protein bars. They are just snacks that you can trust. If you look at the ingredient label, it's all ingredients that you'll recognize, and it's all whole and real food ingredients, just powerhouse ingredients that are going to bring nutrients into our system that support us without bringing all the additives and preservatives that we need to avoid. I can't leave the house without putting a few of them in our bag because I know Jen's going to ask me, did you grab any Paleo Valley beef sticks? I know that I need to include one or two jalapeno ones for her. So go to the link in the show notes, use code OPTIMAL at checkout to get 15% off. They have so many other amazing snacks and different supplements that can support your system. So go and check them out. Code OPTIMAL for 15% off.
All right. We are talking hip pain today, whether it's hip bursitis, whether it's like gluteal tendonitis. You know, we've already discussed a lot on like FAI and osteoarthritis and other stuff. So you can listen to those other podcasts if you've missed them.
Hips that don't lie. Got some hip pain. That's definitely not lying. Yeah. So hip pain, talking more of that lateral hip pain or pain on the outsides of the hips. So people will talk into gluteal bursitis or gluteal tendinopathy, even the greater trochanter. So if you really feel into the outsides of your hips and you'll feel these two big bumps or knobs, those are called our trochanters. So the greater trochanter is that big and knobby thing on the outside of our hips.
Yeah, don't try to rub those out. I got a massage one time and I love massages, but my goodness, this woman was trying to rub out my greater trochanter.
Yeah.
And I felt too bad to say that is a bone to have her stop. So I just let her rub on my bone for a while. That super was a fun comfortable. Experience.
Yeah, super comfortable. Yikes. Not going to make much progress trying to rub out the greater trochanter.
Definitely not. But it is sometimes like this pain on the outside of the hip, like especially when we're talking bursitis or tendonitis, which if you've listened to the episode on tendinosis versus tendonitis, we're talking more of tendinopathies as we learn this, which we'll talk a little bit and explain a little bit about in this episode. But basically, we're not necessarily talking about like the hip pain where you're having significantly reduced range of motion, or it's like hurting to even just like put on your pants or put on a sock or a shoe, you know. Like we're talking more of like that outside of the hip pain when you're doing particular activities that cause an illicit pain. Maybe if I press on the side of your hip, you know, you can elicit that same kind of pain.
A lot of tenderness, totally. Yeah, and it's a lot of it might come on after doing a lot of activity. You know, if you are somebody who's active or athletic and you do an activity once and you just suddenly have this weird pain on the outside of your hip that you're not used to, again, that could be this gluteal tendonitis or bursitis or whatever, because it's this acute or this short-term pain that we're getting that, again, we're not used to on the outside of our hip. So it's not something that might be coming, like you're talking about, from something more degenerative like arthritis or that FAI. We have a whole nother podcast episode on FAI. There's a lot of things that can cause pain around the hip, but a few less things that can specifically cause pain on the outside of that hip.
Exactly. And so we really want to address, okay, what does bursitis mean? Because if, again, when we, or tendonitis, right? Gluteal tendonitis, gluteal meaning the glutes. So the three different types of glutes when we're talking about the butt muscles. Thank you. We're talking about your gluteus maximus, which a lot of people know because that's just the meaty part of your booty.
Glute max.
So that is, you know, the main, if we're looking at an anatomical picture of your butt muscles, the big one in the back, that is your glute max, right? It's kind of covering everything. Then we have our glute med, so our gluteus medius, also very meaty, but also just on the side of your hip. So you have, it kind of spans around the anterior portion, which is toward the front of the hip, and then the back, the posterior portion. So you have this glute med that kind of, we refer to it mostly in stabilization of the hips. And then we also have our glute minimus. So three different muscles there.
Yeah. And the glute medius and the glute minimus are going to get a little bit more action here when we're talking about this, these painful syndromes on the outsides of the hips. In a lot of aspects, we start feeling pain somewhere because we might be overusing it. We might be overstressing it. We may not be giving it enough attention. So it's just kind of getting pulled around. I mean, these muscles are really, really important, but in some aspects, they're not that big and they're not that powerful overall. The glute med is a pretty big muscle. I'll say that, the glute medius, and it almost acts like our rotator cuff or our stabilizer
around that hip.
We have a lot bigger muscles that are a lot more powerful, like our quad, like our hip flexor, like our glute maximus, that if those things are giving a lot of force, the glute medius or the, it's not going to be able to do anything against that. So it might get kind of pulled around if we aren't feeling good balance around that hip.
Yeah. But just like you said, so you mentioned it's an overuse, right? And that's what we talked about as well in that tendonitis versus tendinosis episode, because what we're learning more so is that, yes, you might just initially start to feel it, but it's not necessarily just that it's inflammation of that bursa or inflammation of that tendon. This has been an overuse process. And now over time, based on putting this extra tension or lack of attention at this area, we're now getting this pain. And so rather than having it, it's like a bursosis.
Can a bursosis. Hey, look at that. We made up a new one. We should coin that quick. Call it Jennifer's bursosis.
You're welcome.
Jennifer's Doc Jen Fit bursosis. Doc Jen Fitosis.
Yeah. No? Yeah. I think it works. I mean, basically, we're just saying, you know, it's not that short-term acute stage. It's it's something that's been happening over time, and now you're starting to feel it.
The thing we run into, and I think the reason that we're wanting to kind of change how we name some of these things or what we call some of these things is that we just have chronically called it hip bursitis. Yeah. Oh, you've been having this hip pain. So for the past 30 years, you've been having hip bursitis. But in reality, after that extended or that chronic amount of time, we're not seeing acute inflammation anymore. Again, maybe we go on a run and the very first time it happens, we have the bursa kicking out fluid and there's lots of inflammation. But again, is that just because the bursa's angry itself? Like, no, maybe we were putting extra stress through the gluteus medius tendon and the glute minimus tendon. And that is what then irritated the bursa to cause some of that inflammation. But over time, we just see these chronic tissue changes and not as much acute inflammation. So it would be more of an osis or a gluteal tendinosis or a bursosis.
Yeah. And when we look at like the different bursa that could be affected around the hip and where you might be feeling it, we're looking at our subgluteal tendons. So we are looking, you know, around those gluteal tendons, and bursa are just fluid filled sacs that kind of help to not put as much friction or pressure between the tendon and between the bone. So bursa are necessary. They're all throughout our body and especially around our joints, right? To just help to lubricate and take off some of that friction that happens. So they are there to get rubbed on. They are there to create some cushioning effect, right? It's just when we're now just using that one spot. So we have our subgluteal ones, and we also have our iliopsoas bursa. So now we're looking a little bit deeper, maybe in the front of the hip, right? And the ischial bursa.
The more in the back of the hip. Yeah. Kind of where the hamstrings come in attached right at the bottom of our buttock. a funny word, buttock. But again, you kind of bring it up. So these bursa, they're necessary and they're meant to create fluid. Again, it's sometimes if we have that overproduction or too much pressure being put in one area, we might have that acute inflammation or swelling or pain. When it's sustained for a long time, then we just start getting some more of these degenerative changes. And I was looking at one study that was talking about, gluteal bursitis or hip bursitis, the last great misnomer. And they were doing 25 hip replacements on people that had diagnosed hip bursitis. And just when they went in to actually look at the bursa and when they went in to actually look at the joint, they're like, there's really no inflammation here at all. It's just all of these chronic tissue changes that are probably resulting in that pain. And so again, we shouldn't be doing anything to try and get rid of inflammation as much as trying to remodel these tissues and help these tissues re-understand how to support what we're doing around our hips.
Which is perfect what we get to lead into, because then if we're not just, you know, wanting to reduce inflammation within that area, well, then some of these passive modalities of just doing ultrasound at the hip or just doing putting ice directly on it, or heat packs or iontophoresis or something that's just going to reduce the inflammation. Well, that's not really the goal. I mean, hey, listen, we've talked about some of these before, and if they help to reduce some of your pain for the moment so that you can start moving more, we're not against it, right? However, in general, if we're wanting to start to remodel the tissue, because that's what we're trying to work at, well, then we have to load it. We have to move.
Yeah, we have to find ways to maybe comfortably load that tissue a little bit different. You know, some people might, one of the signs and symptoms of this is if you're standing on a single leg, you might have pain after 10 seconds, 20 seconds. It says you'll get pain before 30 seconds, greater trochanteric pain syndrome.
Yes.
So again,
GTPS.
I was pointing out where that greater trochanter is. It's just that knob on the side of your hips. So greater trochanter pain syndrome, pain of the big knobby thing on your hip. We're kind of moving in that direction because, again, we're not going to say it's exactly the bursa. We're not going to say it's exactly the gluteal tendon. It's hard for us to specifically say what's causing the pain. So we're just going to call it pain. We're going to call it pain of the greater trochanter. How we dice through that, you might need to get with somebody to work through that. We might need to have a professional who can teach us how to do things slightly differently so we can still load those gluteal tendons without the pain.
Right, exactly. And so, and when we get to that pain syndrome on the side of the hip, now we're seeing, okay, it might have been, you know, your gluteal tendinopathies and your bursa that was kind of causing some irritation, but now it's just turning more into that degenerative process. So it's almost, think of it like your arthritis, like, you know, just these changes that are happening over time, which is happening already. So it's just kind of like the spectrum of diagnoses. And we always want to like look for that one diagnosis, that one thing that's causing the problem. But when really it's just like, let's look at the function, what's not working well. Right. And when we look at some of these studies and stuff, we see that it's more, we might have atrophy of these muscles of the glutes. And but when we take a step back, it's like, well, I'm having pain. So was it that they're losing their muscle growth because I stopped wanting to use them so much? So is that what's relating to now seeing that people who have these bursitis or these tendinopathies, or, you know, is that why?
Yeah.
And I just need to slowly start to build up the pressure and the tension so that I'm not getting the pain? Or was it that I didn't have good muscle activation there? I already had atrophy, and that's what led to the pain. So it's hard to really know chicken or egg what came first. But we do see that there is changes in usually those gluteal tendons on the side of the hip. So we need to start tapping back in.
And we see this in so many different conditions where strength and being strong and able and functional predisposes us to having less pain or less symptoms, right? That we see that with knee issues, with things that are happening with our quad or arthritis at the knee. If we have a strong quad, if we have a strong knee, we'll likely feel less pain and be more functional. Same about the hip. I mean, if we are using that and are strong about the hip, we will likely feel less pain. So what if we are feeling pain and then we start doing less and then we lose a little bit more strength and we lose a little bit more control of that muscle and that unit, and then we might feel a little more pain. So then we might do a little bit less. And it's kind of this negative feedback where we have pain, so we do less, which results in more pain, which results in us doing less. And it's really difficult for people to figure out, okay, how does this change? Because as soon as I start doing more, I'm still going to have pain.
Right.
But that's the thing. Would we rather be having pain and doing less, or
and getting
be
worse?
Having pain, understanding how our body can work with that pain and operate and maybe move a little bit and still feel the same amount of pain or less? Or would we rather be doing nothing?
Right.
I'd rather give my body some movement, feel how it responds, likely with guidance if we're at that point, you know, with a PT or with a doctor who's going to be kind of coaching us through that movement. But some of the worst things we can do is like, ooh, it hurts. I'm going to stop doing anything.
Exactly. I mean, I think you outlined that so well in terms of being able to, like, if we stop using it, we lose it. It's literally that term that we hear
Classic.
All that phrase that we hear all the time. You know, so we have to at least start bumping into it. And and I know Dr. Greg Lehman kind of talks into like just tapping the pain and starting to like bump up against it, right? We have to start like inching our way toward it because especially when we talked about in the tendinopathy episode, we're talking if we're really going to start to change those tissues, it takes progressive overload over time and it's going to take time. This is like the thing that no one wants to hear is how long is it going to take for this bursitis to go away? How long is it going to take for this tendon to heal?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, who knows? Everybody is different and it's going to take time, but you have to give yourself the opportunity because that's all we have here anyways, right? We have time.
Yeah.
If you're living, you got time.
I mean, and if we're talking about creating actual tissue changes and creating actual neurologic change that's going to help us create new motor patterns to our hip and to our core and to our legs and how all those gluteal tendons are working together within complex movements like taking a step.
Yeah.
It's going to take a long time and it's difficult for people to understand or even hear that 6 to 8 weeks, that's how long it takes our muscles to even start to learn like, oh, this is a new movement I should start typing in and learning myself. And then it's after those 6 to 8 weeks that we then start tapping into maybe some tendon and tissue changes minimally.
Yeah.
But again, it takes 6 to 8 to 12 weeks of doing something consistently before our body and our physiology says, okay, I get it now. I need to start doing this chronically inside my body.
Yeah. And so how do we start to understand that and use that? I mean, one quick test that you can do, right, is laying on your side. Make sure that your shoulders, your hips, and your feet are in a line, or you can bend the bottom leg if you want, and then lift the top leg and kick it back just a little bit so you get more of those glutes rather than the front of the hip, right? So kick it back just a little bit without arching in the back. And then lift it to where you can without moving in the hips, right? So it might not be very high. That's okay. And then hold it. And if you have someone else around you, see if they can like kind of push it down. And then test side to side. So you always want to see based on your own body, like, do I feel weaker one side versus another?
Yeah.
And this is just a good place to start to see how your muscle is even responding, right? Can it withhold even just without anyone pushing? Can you hold for like 30 seconds to a minute? Or does it start to lower? Or am I different side to side? Or does it cause pain? So where can I push into where I don't have pain right now, right? And how can I start to lift and use this muscle without pain? Where is that within your body?
And I mean, similarly to that, testing side to side can be so valuable. And another thing that's can be pretty easy and might be tough for some people is just that standing on one leg. And like we brought up, if a way to test between sides or if you're noticing pain on one or both sides is just try and lift one leg up into a march. Like you're going to hold one knee up in front of you. It's nice if you even like have a mirror to look into just to see like, okay, is my body really wanting to tilt one way versus the other? Is my hip kind of wanting to pop out? How long can I stay before I start to notice, you know, pain or discomfort in my hip, and then switch to the other side and see if you notice a significant difference. But that's an easy way, either the one that Jen talked about laying on your side or the standing one, that you can go back to that at any time and kind of retest and say, okay, how are the legs comparing to each other today or in this moment?
And then we can start, okay, what are the exercises that I can do to start building up the sides of my hip? And, you know, you can use bands and you can do bridges with bands where you put some pressure outside on those knees. You can even start to do squats or lunges with bands around the side of your knee. So you're pressing out into it. obviously decrease the weight, decrease the range of motion, like move within what you're able to do. But the more that you start to just start to tap into it and build that strength, the stronger those hips are going to be. Mm-hmm. And I always say too, like, look at what you're doing. You say you're a runner who has a lot of hip pain, but all you do for strength training is double leg stuff. Like, I do a lot of squatting, or I do a lot of, you know, deadlifting, but I'm not doing single leg deadlift. Mm-hmm. I'm not doing Bulgarian split squat, you know? Mm-hmm. So you have to also address, if I want to run, which is a single leg activity and puts a lot of stress through a single leg, am mm-hmm. I training a single leg? So this is a good way to kind of see what you're doing in your body on a training basis that's going to relate to what you want to do and functionally.
Yeah. If standing on one leg is difficult for you and you're a runner, and if you notice you have one leg that's difficult to stand on, then try jumping from one leg to another leg and landing and holding and controlling. That's essentially what we do every time we run. Mm-hmm. Every time we take a step running, we're launching our body from one foot to the other, and we should be able to control ourselves through that motion and stop and pause at any time. Otherwise, that tells me that we are uncontrollably flinging ourselves from foot to foot.
Yeah.
And it doesn't surprise me that we might have pain somewhere along that chain.
Yeah. And I also love looking at, like, okay, so we're not necessarily saying here that maybe your range of motion is significantly decreased in the hip, right? But still training that range of motion and at the end ranges. So if we're talking hip 90-90, which is something that I've shown on my page a lot, you know, if we're sitting in that hip 90-90, how am I activating? So am I, can I lift my front leg? Can I lift my back leg? Can I move controlled side to side between the two? So, like, not just working on range of motion, but working on control through the range of motion is also going to help to get some lubrication through those hips, work the muscles around those hips, and just help you to fluidly be able to move better when you're doing your exercise or you're functioning throughout the day.
Yeah, that active range of motion is huge. I mean, you'll see people who will drop and go down and touch their toes, but then if you ask them to keep their legs straight and raise it up, see how much functional hamstring length they have, like keeping your legs straight and then raising it up as high as you can, and they can't even make it to 90, but they can touch their knee to their forehead.
Yeah.
Like, that tells you actively how are you able to control through your hamstring.
Yeah.
Same thing with all the different ranges around the hip. You might be able to passively get a lot of different range, but if your body doesn't feel safe actively supporting through there, that tells you something.
Yeah. So it's like not just sitting in pigeon all day long, right? We might not need to be just stretching it. But can we control? So think about those figure four, those pigeon stretches. Well, how are we actively bringing that leg into that rotation? And what are the exercises that I'm doing to actually work in that full range of motion? So again, this is when working with a physical therapist or getting in with someone who's going to explain these ranges of motion that we're talking about, because you might be listening being like, I don't know what that is. Yeah. Hopefully, if I say pigeon, most people are familiar, right, with what I'm talking about. But, and even, you know, that's where whatever shameless plug of looking at the Optimal Body membership and moving within it, I'm instructing the entire time. Like, literally, it's movement and learning from a physical therapist as you're moving through exercise.
Totally. And that can be a frustrating thing when Jen and I will say, just try these movements and notice yourself and notice what you might be doing differently or what might be difficult for you. And if you're finding yourself getting frustrated when we say things like that, I would encourage you to continue try more of that, to try and do movement and decipher things yourself. Because once you empower yourself to do that, then all these things that Jen is saying will make sense. Then she'll do some random movement on her Instagram and you go through it and you say to yourself, ooh, that little part there was tough. Mm-hmm. Let me focus on that a little bit more. And those are the things that once you start to pull those out of your own movement, then you're doing the things that the PT normally would for you. But trust me, you can feel better what you're feeling than they can when they watch you.
Oh, totally.
You are your own best detective when you are assessing your own movement.
And I think that's why people can actually feel different when they do the Optimal Body, because I'm not sitting there one-on-one instructing people. So if they're just learning and doing it and then assessing their own body, then they're doing the work.
And those mobility flows, like in the Optimal Body, you get a lower body mobility flow, and it can be anything. Mm-hmm. And it takes you through some really crazy stuff all through, you know, the 12 months of the first year of the optimal body, you're doing a different lower body mobility flow. So you're going to learn a little bit different thing for your hips or your knees or your ankles or your toes, depending on what month it is. So lots to learn there.
Yeah, especially with the muscle activations. Like, again, we go back to, okay, laying on your side and trying to see if you can do the kicking your leg out to the side and holding that. Well, we do so much more within those muscle activations, right? We start with clams and understanding what you're properly should be doing when you're holding a clam, because I think like that's a huge one that people just bypass. But also hip extension, but also using those hips when you're activating in a lunge, when you're holding against a wall, when you're, you know, we do so many different muscle activations because it's not just about identifying weakness and working through that, but it's also identifying coordination through movement. Like, how can I use my glutes while I'm deadlifting? Can I use my glutes while I'm squatting? So my goal with the optimal body, I will say, is teaching people to build that neurological connection so that they can use the muscle and then progressively load that way.
Yeah. The muscle activations are my favorite, and I refer to them as my primers. I always call them primers, muscle activations, muscle primers, whatever it is that's going to get that muscle thinking so that when you do a certain movement, whether it's in your workout or in your day, your body's going to say, hey, I remember when I did that muscle activation earlier today, or when I did that primer, I primed the system so that I was ready to do it in my everyday life. And the more we do those primers, the more we consciously work that in, the more our body's going to unconsciously start to mix that into our movement.
So if you're having this bursitis or this tendonitis on the side of your hip, are there movements and motions that you've been neglecting? And what can you start to test and assess within yourself? And then how can you start to load that just a little bit every day? Maybe not every day, but 3 times a week, 4 times a week, whatever.
Wherever your body's at.
Yeah.
How can
and then
you load
start
it?
To work that, you know, more aggressive, more aggressive, more aggressive over time. That's progressive overload right there. And that's going to help you to start feel different.
Wrapping up another awesome PT Pearl. Again, if you've been loving what you're hearing or have questions or different topics you want us to cover, leave a review. Let us know what topic you want us to cover in the future. Reach out to us on our Instagram profiles. Leave us a DM. We will get to it, and we will hopefully be able to incorporate any new topics that we hear you guys want for the PT Pearls. That's all what it's for. This is all for you. And of course, if you've been loving it, please go subscribe and leave a review on your favorite podcasting app. That just helps this thing get seen so much more. Forward this episode to a friend. If you know that you have somebody who's been dealing with hip issues, this might be what they need to help support them in their body. And of course, we'll see you next time.